Brink Harbor.
Stories of UFO sightings and alien abductions date back centuries. My next guest says the rumors are true. He was abducted by aliens 45 years ago.
The abduction phenomenon is clandestine. The way the secrecy prevails is that first and foremost, the abductees are not allowed to remember what happened to them. So when they do remember, it's not a full memory. It's in bits and pieces of memory.
I did a polygraph, a voice stress test. There was eyewitnesses to this account.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, alien, Sasquatch, all things strange. This is Strange Harbor.
Another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, ghosts, UFOs, and alien abductions, Sasquatch, conspiracies, theories, near-death experience, and so much more. I'm Johnny Manson, and she is MUFON investigator Sherita Seuss.
Keeping it real with UFOs.
Our guest today, Kathleen Marden. Sheree?
Oh, she's a historian, an investigator of UFOs, and contact with non-humans, an author of several professionally published books, a featured on-camera commentator, and an international lecturer. She earned a BA degree in social work and was employed as an educator and education services coordinator while attending graduate school. Her interest in UFO and contact began all the way in 1961 when her aunt and uncle, Betty and Barney Hill, had a close encounter and subsequent abduction in New Hampshire's White Mountains. She is a member of MUFON and a really important member. She has, she's on the ERT team. We've talked about that, the Experiencers Resource Team. And I'm introducing Kathleen Marden. Hello and good morning.
Hello, good morning. Nice to speak with you.
It's good to speak with you as well. We are here at Strange Harbor very happy to have you on. You really are the queen of UFOs. I mean, you have been on everything, in everything. You're on top of everything. Tell us what you're up to lately.
Oh, my goodness. Well, lately I have been getting my the 60th anniversary edition of my book with Stanton T. Friedman, nuclear physicist who unfortunately passed away in 2019. But for the 60th anniversary of the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience, I have updated this book. I've written an entire chapter on the new scientific data and really exciting information that has been discovered since the last book was published in 2007.
Wow.
So this is a very special edition. I also wrote a preface on Stanton Friedman. So that's what I'm up to. I'm working on another book, but I'm doing that very slowly because I remain busy and have little time to do writing on that book. But it will probably be released in 2 to 3 years.
Oh. Well, you do a lot of research, and you rub elbows with some of the premium individuals, ufologists, in the world. So you're gathering this information for your new book. But tell me more about the book that you've updated. Now, was that from Captured?
Yes, yes. It was Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience that was published in 2007, but this year, 2021, marks the 60th anniversary of their close encounter and abduction in New Hampshire's White Mountains. So my publisher wanted to put out the second edition of the book. This is larger than the first edition and has new information and very exciting information.
Ooh.
So we are, it is available for purchase right now. It can be purchased on Amazon.com, on Barnes & Noble, on several other online bookstores. I even read that it's going to be sold in Walmart and Target.
Ooh.
And, of course, you can receive autographed copies from me from my website.
I want one.
Kathleen-Marden.com.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay, for our listeners, put us up to speed on your aunt, Betty Hill, and her husband, Barney, and what they experienced that night.
I would love to. My aunt, Betty Hill, was a social worker for the state of New Hampshire. Barney worked for the post office, and both were extremely involved in civil rights, in human rights, and in voter rights in the state of New Hampshire. They were politically connected there. In fact, I went to Lyndon Johnson's inauguration with them because my aunt, Uncle Barney was a delegate. At that time, he was also appointed to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission representing the state of New Hampshire. So those are the people that Betty and Barney were, sort of a resume of who they were. But in 1961, they were an interracial couple, and I had visited Niagara Falls with my Aunt June, who was Betty's sister, and my Uncle Alex and my cousin. And we went to Niagara Falls, and we had a great time. I took lots of photographs, and Betty and Barney lived only 20 miles away from my childhood home, so visited frequently. And I was showing them those photographs, and Barney said to Betty, would you like to go to Niagara Falls? And she said, yes, I'd love to. I've never been. And so Barney decided to surprise her with a trip to Niagara Falls. She had a week's vacation from her job. She was working in child welfare at the time, but later worked in adoption. And so he surprised her with this trip to Niagara Falls. So they went from Niagara Falls to Toronto on to Montreal the following day and had intended to spend the night in Montreal. But they heard that there was a hurricane whirling up the East Coast, and so they wanted to drive home just to put away any yard furniture they had and to prepare for the hurricane. So they decided that if they grew tired, they would stop along the way and spend the night at a motel. But they found themselves at about 11 o'clock that night, driving on Route 3 in upstate New Hampshire, when Betty saw a new light in the sky. And it triggered her attention because it moved differently than a conventional aircraft or a meteorite. What she saw moved up in the air, swooping up rather than down. So she continued to watch it, trying to identify what it was. Was it a satellite? Was it some kind of craft that we had that she didn't know about? And finally, it started moving in closer and closer. And she asked Barney to stop the car for a look at this craft. They stopped. They got back into the car after looking at it. They traveled through a beautiful area of New Hampshire known as Franconia Notch. And in Franconia Notch, there is Cannon Mountain, which is a ski area. And New Hampshire's state symbol was the man of the mountain. It fell off the mountain, unfortunately, in 2003. And so then they came out of Franconia Notch into North Lincoln. And North Lincoln was the area of New Hampshire where the tourist attractions and motels were along the road. And they decided that they really wanted to stop again because this craft was coming in so close. So Barney was looking for a place to pull over when suddenly the craft swooped ahead and descended right above their car, within 200 feet of their car, above the highway. Barney stopped the car and grabbed his binoculars and got out for a better look, while Betty remained in the passenger seat. He moved away from the car, stepped back, and as he stepped back, the craft shifted to an adjacent field, which would have been to the right, and it descended even lower. It descended to within 100 feet of the ground and about 50 feet away from Barney.
Ooh.
He was a confirmed skeptic. He did not believe that flying saucers, as they were called in those days, were real. And he was going to prove to himself that this had to be some kind of military craft. So he walked into that field, he held the binoculars to his eyes, and through the windows of this craft he saw several figures, I have to call them figures, who were dressed in black, shiny uniforms.
Okay.
That's what was written into the first report that Betty and Barney wrote on September 26, 1961, just days after they had this encounter.
Huh.
And the problem was that Barney became terrified, so terrified that he developed a mental block for what their faces looked like. And the reason he became terrified is that all of the entities who had moved away from the window, leaving only one at the window looking down at Barney, lifted their arms into the air, and when this happened, little red lights started to slide out from the craft, two of them, and something started to drop down out of the bottom of the craft. And he wondered if it was a rope. We know now that it's not a rope, that it is kind of a carrier beam that the entities descend on and take humans up to the craft.
Oh, okay.
So what happened is when this began, when Barney was looking up at this, he became terrified. He said that he thought that he was going to be captured like, quote, a bug in a net, close quote.
Mm.
And that is when he decided that he needed to get out of there and fast. He tore the binoculars down from his eyes and ran screaming in a hysterical state back to the car, telling Betty that they had to get out of there or they were going to be captured, thus the name of the book. And as he was approaching the car, he noticed that the craft was now moving in his direction. He went speeding down the highway. He told Betty to roll her window down and look up to see if she could see the craft. She was expecting to see lights. When she looked up, she didn't see lights. All she saw was blackness. And within a few seconds, she and Barney heard a series of code-like buzzing sounds striking the trunk of their vehicle, and a tingling sensation passed through their body. The next thing they knew, they were 35 miles down the highway with very little memory of what had happened in the interim. They remembered finding themselves on a dirt road with tall trees all around. They remembered a roadblock. And they remembered what resembled a large fiery orb sitting on the ground. They heard the second series of beeps 35 miles down the road, and that brought them back to full consciousness. And this is when Betty said to Barney, "Now do you believe in flying saucers?" And he replied, "Oh, Betty, don't be ridiculous. There's no such thing, and I can prove it to you. I can make those sounds we just heard." So he stopped the car, he drove it from one side of the road to the other, and he could not make those buzzing sounds on the car. So they just drove on home. And when they arrived, there was evidence that was very perplexing. It was determined later. This was under hypnosis 27 months later.
Mm-hmm.
Barney had developed post-traumatic stress disorder.
Oh.
And conversion hysteria, where psychological problems, psychogenically induced, was causing a physiological response. He had a high level of anxiety related to that sighting. He had developed stomach ulcers, high blood pressure. He wasn't sleeping. He even had to take a couple of months off from work because he ended up in the hospital with bleeding ulcers.
Yeah.
So he was eventually referred to Dr. Benjamin Simon. And Dr. Simon hypnotized Betty and Barney separately. Dr. Simon was renowned for his work and the hypnosis process that he developed to help soldiers from World War II who were from the war with these problems. And so he was the perfect psychiatrist, actually, to work with Betty and Barney, especially with Barney, who had suffered so greatly from
wow.
what had occurred. Dr. Simon hypnotized them separately and reinstated hypnosis at the end of each session. So they could not share information with one another. And he also said that at times they were so traumatized by what they were going through that if they did remember this all at once, it could induce greater anxiety. So as a professional psychiatrist, he knew not to do that. So he worked with them for a period of 6 months, and what they looked like did come out during that period.
Mm.
There were two groups on the craft. There was a group that today we know as the escorts and the assistants. They were about 3.5 to 4 feet tall, had very large heads, gray skin, large dark eyes, and spindly arms and legs. So they were humanoid in form, meaning that they had a head, a torso, two arms, and two legs. And there has been speculation about whether or not these were actually biorobotic or robotic and only did their job. We don't know that for certain. They could be sentient beings as well. But the taller ones were different. Betty and Barney described them as being Asian in appearance. They had gray skin as well, not like Asians, but they had slanted eyes, large, but kind of wrapped around to the sides of their heads a little bit, very small nose with two nostrils, and a slit from a mouth. And they remembered observing some kind of membrane inside that mouth that would vibrate or flutter when these entities appeared to be communicating with one another. But Betty and Barney did not hear words. All they heard was a kind of a mumming sound and very, very soft. But Betty and Barney, when they were addressed by these non-human entities, had it was telepathic in nature.
Right.
They heard this in their heads. So these entities, there was the examiner, and the one that they called the leader, who was what we now call the escort, in the examining room, Betty was examined first, Barney was examined second, and under hypnosis, these taller entities had more responsibility for the physical examination and for communication with Betty and Barney. And they, time and time again, reassured them that they would not be harmed, that they had only to do a few simple tests and then they would be on their way, and that they had absolutely no intention or ill intention toward Betty and Barney.
Wow. Okay. So this isn't unusual to have more than one alien being seen in one ship or one incident. So this
No, it's not unusual.
Yeah.
The people that I have worked with, probably a couple of thousand to this point, over the past 30 or so years. Talk about these smaller entities who line up against the wall and only move when they're directed to do so.
Right.
And then only two or three or sometimes four of the taller entities in the examining room and in the type of craft that Betty and Barney were in, there tends to be only one person per room.
Right.
In some of the larger crafts, there were several beds in a room where people see one another, but not for Betty and Barney. They were in separate examining rooms.
Now, in 1961, as you have said before, this was the first for the United States of an actual capture of two civilians and medically examined. How did that relate to their life as they went on? Did they fully understand what had happened to them over time?
Over time and through hypnosis, they were able to understand what had occurred. For Betty, the response that she had was to have five dreams that occurred just before waking in the morning when she was in that kind of hypnopompic state. And we know today that although these dreams contain fantasy elements, they can also contain real information.
Right.
Betty was very, very curious. So what she did immediately after they had this sighting and missing time event, at least 2 to 3 hours when they arrived home, I didn't mention the physical evidence, her torn dress. The tops of my uncle's dress shoes were so deeply scraped that he had to purchase new shoes.
Mm.
The watches they had been wearing were broken and never ran again. The binocular strap had been severed, and there were shiny circular spots on the trunk of their car that hadn't been there the day before, and there was a magnetic field around that trunk. So to get back to your question, Betty's response was, besides having these dreams that started with consciously recalled information, but sandwiched between this consciously recalled information was a UFO abduction.
Mm.
The difference is those entities that she dreamed about did not look like extraterrestrials. They looked like Southern Europeans. Innocent, black hair, about 5.5 feet tall. They had human features. They had a regular human build. And in her dream, they had blue cadet uniforms.
Uh-huh.
So that was her dream, and it differed from what I just described as the entities they saw on the craft.
Well, your brain, you know, tries to fill in what you know from what you're seeing that you've never seen before. So this is not unusual. That's kind of fantasizing about uniforms or to make any kind of sense out of it.
Yes, yes, that is true. And she was highly curious.
More with Denise of Betty and Barney Hill, Kathleen Martin, coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor. Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we've been talking with Kathleen Martin, who's a member of MUFON and an author, and niece to Barney and Betty Hill, who had a very well-documented abduction experience. So, Kathleen, were they traumatized by all this, I would assume?
She wasn't traumatized to the degree that Barney was, and I think the reason for that is that Barney is the person who walked into the field and had conscious recall of observing these non-human entities on this disc-shaped craft, just silent and hovering. And he is the individual who received the message that he had to get out of there or he was going to be captured. Betty did not have that same experience.
Right.
So she was just sitting in the car. She'd observed the craft, but the fear of being captured wasn't there at
right.
that time. It did arise when after that series of beeps, it was revealed in hypnosis, and when she found herself on that dirt road with the roadblock and realized that they were non-human, she attempted to escape. She had never been so terrified in her entire life.
But
that probably was in her subconscious mind and caused the dreams that she had. Now, for Barney, he just became very ill, as I said, and ended up being referred for hypnosis. He wanted to forget about this entire event.
Sure.
He just said, Betty, nothing good can come out of this. Just forget it. And he became angry with her as she became more curious about the physical evidence that was left behind.
I can understand that. When you have a marriage of a very logical mind and orderly and, conducts his life, in this orderly fashion, and then to run into the very thing that he has no belief in, it can really take a toll. So
yes,
I'm not...
absolutely did respond.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the newer techniques or newer instrumentation that brought you to write the new book on Betty and Barney Hill called Captured? What was it that you found out that was new?
Well, my publisher would kick me out if I gave that information because it would mean no one would buy this book. But I can tell you that we have found new evidence, both scientific and reporters, and there has even been an update on the star map. So it is all in the new book.
Ooh, that sounds really great. Did this new information help the ERT experiencer resource team through MUFON to get a better understanding of what their experiencers go through?
I do think that it does give MUFON members who are on the ERT a better understanding, but I've written other books as well. That are more recent. They tell of more recent contact. And one is the Alien Abduction File that I wrote with Denise Stoner, who I am the director of the ERT. Denise is my personal assistant and a long-time experiencer. She's also the assistant state director for Florida. And then another book that I wrote just recently that is required reading for all members of the ERT is Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. It's kind of a survivor's guide to alien abduction, and it gives a great deal of insight into different types of contact, ranging from benevolent to more malevolent. Two members on the team who worked in the psychiatric settings, wrote two chapters in the book. One was Anne Castle, brilliant woman who gave us insight into what experiencers go through while they're processing this experience. And also Maddie Tobias, who treated veterans who were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, and also helped people who were survivors of cults as well. Maddie has a long history as a psychotherapist, and she wrote a chapter on how to cope with this experience as well, and how not to get involved in a cult. What we also added to the book is the social science research that has been done on experiencers, how to investigate your own experiences if you're in question of what to look for to know whether or not this is real or a dream or some kind of sleep hallucination. We included a lot of statistics in that chapter. Also, Denise wrote chapters on angels, demons, and parasites, because as a team, we have discovered that it's not all extraterrestrial.
Right.
There might be ghosts and paranormal phenomena
right.
involved in this, or parasites or interdimensional negative entities. And I can tell you that I was highly skeptical about that, because when I began this research, I was coming from strictly a scientific social science background.
Sure.
A scientific background. And in my psychology classes back in college, I learned that there was not a paranormal experience that was real, that this was all had a psychological basis. And so over the years, I learned that the psychologists were wrong, that the parapsychologists have collected scientific evidence that it is, in fact, real.
Yes.
So we wrote about that, about the changes that experiencers make as they process this, and as they have multiple contact experiences over a lifetime.
Right.
And also a chapter on when you want it to stop. What kind of coping strategies can you use, and what kind of resistance techniques? So they're all laid out in the book. And I had a special request from experiencers to write a chapter on going public. What happens if you want to go public? How do you do this?
Uh-huh.
What are the consequences?
Mm-hmm.
So we have all of this. And at the end of each chapter is a worksheet. So if you're an experiencer, it will help you to process what you are going through. But this book is also useful to psychotherapists and the general population who is interested in contact phenomena.
Well, one of the things I find interesting about your immediate past was that you worked on three social research projects at MUFON with nearly 5,000 collections, and your investigation of case after case of contact with non-humans. So you actually combined all of these 5,000 experiencers that had experienced some alien contact of some kind, and you are able to put all your findings, I believe, in extraterrestrial contact?
Let me be clear about this. No, all the findings are not in extraterrestrial contact. The first study was done in 2012. There were 75 participants. 50 were experiencers, and 25 was a control group. And so we did this study in order to determine whether or not experiencers had characteristics that they shared and were uncommon among the control group. You can read that study on my website at kathleen-marden.com. The second study that I was talking about was done by the Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Encounters. I'm on the board of directors of that foundation. And this was a study that we did. We wrote our book when we had 3,200 participants, and now Free has received 5,000 samples. The only problem with that is that they eventually released all of the results, so it kind of it could skew the results of that study for individuals who want to have all of these characteristics.
Right.
Then
right.
From 2015 to 2018, members of the Experiencer Resource Team, then called the Experiencer Research Team, conducted a three-year study on experiencers. Dr. Don C. Dondary, a research psychologist from McGill University, recently retired, worked on the study. Dr. Michael Austin Nelson was another. The late Craig Lang, who had he had a master's degree in computer science, but he was also a hypnotherapist who worked with experiencers. And Denise Stoner and I worked on this one as well. And what we were able to do was to identify the characteristics that all of the experiencers who took part in this study shared. But first, we eliminated those that were wannabes or hoaxers.
Uh-huh.
And we had inserted special questions in order to identify those people. And we eliminated those who didn't complete the questionnaire that was we had posted through the Mutual UFO Network. So we had eliminated those. We ended up with 516 participants. And then Dr. Dondary came in, and he gave 175 of these individuals the American Personality Inventory. That inventory was based on the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory for the investigation or a test to determine psychological stability. It was developed by Ted Davis, who was a psychiatric social worker from Long Island, in conjunction with Bud Hopkins, the late, great researcher who did a lot of scientific research with the members of the scientific community. And Dr. Dondary was the one who ended up standardizing that and overseeing it as it was administered to many, many people who were confirmed abductees. People who were wannabes that would separate them out because they didn't have the same characteristics as abductees. And then the general public, meaning people who just might decide they're going to hoax and really skew the results of the study to invalidate it.
Well,
so,
Kathleen, the big question is, how does someone know if they've had an experience with an alien species? How do they know? What are the things you look for?
What we look for is whether these people had a close encounter with a craft at 500 feet or less. If their family members did as well. That is what we originally were looking for. Maybe hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations that caused them to believe that they might have had this experience, but you know what it was is actually a normal sleep-related experience that many people have.
Okay.
So those are some of the things that we looked for. We also know things that experiencers share in common that are not common in the general population. So we wanted to know if experiencers had this. We wanted to know if they had any physiological problems that we knew experiencers do have at a very high rate. And so we looked for those things as well. And we put all of this together, and, you know, anybody who completed this questionnaire of 118 questions was referred to Dr. John Derry.
Right.
And he ended up using 175 who had permitted him to then take the American Personality Inventory. And we had asked members of the experiencer research team to make referrals from people that they believed were real abductees. So we ended up having an experiencer population of people who we believed were having real experiences. Some of them were well-known abductees who you might have read about or might have heard about in, on television. And so we know that their experience was verified.
Kathleen?
So we had this population in our sample, but it was the API, the American Personality Inventory, the 65 questions that identified those who had UFO abduction syndrome.
Right.
And we wanted to look at those who were closest to the target of actually having UFO abduction syndrome.
Kathleen, I have a big question here. Why is this continuing? Why do the same aliens, you know, visit and capture and, you know, do physical examinations? We haven't changed in the last 100 years. We're pretty much the same, you know, biological unit. Why are people having experiences still? What is going on?
Well, we had open-ended questions on both Freeze study and on MUFON ERT study. And what we discovered is that these non-human entities state that they are extremely concerned about environmental pollutants, that we have not been good stewards to our environment. They've been giving this information to experiencers since 1954, as far as I've been able to determine. And they have taken flesh samples, and they say the reason for that is to test the body for environmental toxicity. So they're keeping track of that. We also know that they had a program, a kind of a hybridization program, where they were attempting to combine the species somehow. That would indicate that they're genetically related to us.
If, yes.
Or they have some method, highly advanced method, of splicing their genes into humans.
Right.
But we know, based upon our research, that many experiencers believe that they are actually hybrids, born to humans on this planet. We know that many have observed hybrids on craft, too, who do not look completely human. And so the question is, why are they doing this? Well, some experiencers say that it is for their benefit and ours, that they have lost their ability to reproduce as a species. And I'm talking about the grays. You know, there are several types.
Right.
But this is specific to the grays.
Uh-huh.
They've lost the ability to reproduce, and they're acquiring this from the human genetics. they also say that they don't have the emotions that they once had, and they're attempting to generate some of these positive emotions. And that's what experiencers say. Now, also, they say that they are harvesting this DNA so that they will have it in case we destroy our planet. And also, they are seeding other planets that they have terraformed with this DNA. And also, it's very complicated, not just human DNA, but that way back in the 50s and 60s, they were observed all over the world in gardens, taking samples of plants, taking soil samples. That's the way we interpreted it then.
Right.
So apparently they're kind of doing what we think of as the Noah's Ark story.
Yeah.
And another reason they say is that our technological development is out of sync with our spiritual growth. And they fear that as a result of this, we could destroy this planet. And so they're attempting to alter humans so that we will become more spiritual, so that we will have a different view of our planet and our place on this planet. So because they do not want to see us destroy our planet through nuclear warfare, and they have seen this occur on other planets.
Well, wow, that's a lot to think about, Kathleen. And you know, Johnny and I, we really appreciate that you've come on the show today and explained a lot of these things for our listeners. So let's just talk about your book again. The one that you're putting out that's like number two for Captured?
Yes, this is the updated 60th anniversary version, edition of Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. You can purchase it now online at any of the bookstores, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and many others. I'm told that it's going to be available at Target and Walmart. I'm not sure if it's there yet. You can purchase autographed copies from my website at Kathleen-Marden, MARDEN.com. And also, I have many articles that might interest you that you can read absolutely free.
Oh, gosh, that sounds great, Kathleen. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. It was very nice speaking with you today.
I'm halfway through the Alien abduction files, and I haven't yet picked up the extraterrestrial contact. I'll have to do that today. But I want autographed copies.
Okay, well, just order it through my website. I have copies here, and I will be happy to autograph them. And if you want them personalized in any way, just write it in the message.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you'd like to know more about Kathleen, listen to back episodes, shop our Strange Harbor store merchandise, send us your experience, or just yell at us for being tinfoil hat wearing whack jobs, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor.